This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture.
Each week, for more information about our class and our UCLA Mindful Teachers, offers a talk about UCLA health and understanding UCLA Mindful.
Thanks for joining us.
Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.
Once, about 4 months ago or so it was, maybe. And I'm delighted to be back. So my voice tends to be low volume, and if you can't hear me, you can raise your hand or maybe turn up your volume. But I do have a soft voice. Yeah. So today, what I'd like to offer are teachings and practices at the intersections of poetic medicine, healing, and mindfulness. So this term poetic medicine was given to us by John Fox, and this poetic medicine is a healing force, whether we write it, read it, hear it. And perhaps a phrase from, or an insight from Mary Oliver points to the power of poetry and what I hope to convey and offer in the next hour and a half. And she offers this insight on the healing force of poetic medicine, poetry as medicine. And this is what she says. Poetry is a life-cherishing force. Poems are not words after all, but fires for the cold, ropes let down to the lost, something as necessary as bread in the pocket of the hungry. Isn't that beautiful? That deep, that healing, that necessary. More on poetic medicine a little bit later, but let's, once I share a little bit more about poetic medicine, I'd like to invite us to do communal readings of poems, where we read poems to one another. Yeah? And I'll say a little bit more about that later. But right now, let's do a little practice. I'll guide us through the practice and see where we go. Yeah? So I invite you to find a comfortable way to sit. Not too rigid. Relaxed. You wish you can close your eyes or leave them open with a soft gaze, maybe a foot or two ahead of you, just so you're not distracted. And turning your awareness to sensations in the body, softening the body, softening the shoulders, the neck, forehead, the jaw, letting go of the tension that might have accumulated over the course of our day, and just softening. Soft belly, soft hands, gentle placement of your hands, perhaps on lap, armchair, fingers laced, just noticing the soft, gentle pressure of hand, wherever they may be. Noticing our feet on the ground, carpet, tile, noticing texture, coolness, warmth, tingling, sensation of a heel on the ground, cushion, couch, toes. Just connecting to this place we call home. Other touch points as well, our sit bone as we sit on the couch or the chair. Some of us may be lying down, others may be standing. But just noticing pressure, touch, noticing our back touching the couch or the cushion or the chair. Noticing we have a back. Not trying to do anything overly complicated, just using our superpower of attention to come back to the present moment through our body sensations. Noticing any throbbing in the body, legs, arms, back, shoulders, hands, noticing coolness, warmth, perhaps tingling. It's nothing we need to fix. Gently bringing awareness to your breath. Those of you who have been practicing for some time know that can also be sounds or emotions, sensations in the body, but right now bringing awareness to breath, this normal, gentle breath, noticing the sensation of breathing in either the abdomen or the chest or the nostril, for some people in the back of the throat. Here we're not thinking about breathing, we're actually noticing the sensation of inhaling and exhaling. So if we're paying attention to breath at the abdomen, the expanding, contracting of the abdomen with each inhale and exhale. Same with the chest, rising, expanding, contracting. Breathing in, breathing out. Noticing maybe the subtle movement of shoulder up and down with each inhale if you're using your chest as the object of attention. Or alternatively, you might be using your superpower of attention to focus on the sensations of breath at the nostril, coolness of air as it enters, and the soft, subtle tingling of the exhale at the nostril. So that's the practice for the next few minutes, is picking one of those three areas, abdomen, chest, nostril, perhaps the back of the throat. That's your home base. That's what we keep coming back to when inevitably we drift, and we will drift. It's not a problem, drifting. What we're after is noticing the drift and then using the muscle memory, the muscle, the gym of attention to intentionally, on purpose, redirect awareness and attention back to breath, abdomen, chest, or nostril. Yeah. So in some ways, counterintuitively, the drift is our greatest gift. It's not a sign of failure. Because if we notice the drift, we can make the choice to return home, to redirect our attention back to the body, to the sensations of breathing. That's how we know we're in the present. The body, the breath is always in the present. So the practice of mindfulness is not on the drift, but on the return. I'll stay silent for a few moments and invite you to practice with breath. And of course, if you wish, you can switch to sound if that's more convenient for you. Listening to sounds, close in, far away. Back home. Even if you return home one time in a meditation practice, that's no minor success. We can let go of the tyranny of perfection. All mindfulness is noticing. If you notice that you have drifted, you have success. And now, acknowledging the drift, drifting, wandering. Thinking. Ruminating. We acknowledge it. We don't condemn it. We acknowledge it. After all, we've been given a gift of noticing. And once acknowledged, we make the decision to gently return to home base, to breath, abdomen, chest, nostril. And we do this again and again. Perhaps this delightful insight from Mary Oliver again. Can be of benefit. We can allow it to seep into our practice. She says, beautifully framed, it is only the intimate, not the general, that is teacherly. Yeah? It is only the intimate, not the general, that is teacherly. So mindful attention, mindfulness, is an encounter with the intimate. A close-in, embodied, sensory, personal encounter with the substance of life. In this case, breath, sensations. Yeah. It's an encounter with the intimate, not the general, that is teacherly. And she further reminds us that attention is the beginning of devotion. Yeah, an intimate, teacherly encounter with love. An intimate encounter with, in this case, breath, rising, falling, noticing, drifting, coming back. It's a delicious encounter without judgment. This encounter, this intimate encounter, for example, when we in our daily walk, stop to meet a single blade of grass or flower, or when we witness a rabbit eating zen-like a single strawberry, or when we feel the rain on our faces, or delight in the sweet scent of a grove of California bay or sage plant. Or when we encounter or have an encounter with a stone or a stranger's story or witness small kindnesses, or as we listen to the sound of a river speaking, or the stirring of leaves of trees calling out, stay a while. All of these, we are in a devotional dance with attention. It is the intimate that is teacherly. Intimate encounters. It is in Mary Oliver's poem, When I'm Among Trees, that she helps us encounter the intimate at its most teacherly. And I'd like to read that poem to you. When I'm Among the Trees, by Mary Oliver. When I'm among the trees, especially the willows and the honey locust, equally the beech, the oaks, and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness. I would almost say that they save me and daily. I am so distant from the hope of myself in which I have goodness and discernment, and never hurry through the world, but walk slowly and bow often. Around me, the trees stir in their leaves and call out, "Stay a while." The light flows from their branches, and they call again. "It's simple," they say, "and you too have come into the world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light, and to shine." So we cultivate attention as a practice of love, of devotion. Attention to breath, sounds, sensations in the body. And with each return to home base, we have an encounter with teacherly intimacy. The present moment. So let's spend a few more minutes with this teacherly encounter, gentle attention to breath. Inhale, exhale. And coming back home, an act of devotion. As we bring this opening practice to close, you might take a moment to offer yourself appreciation, kind salutation, an intimate and warm friendship to self for taking the time to allow the intimate to do the teaching. Taking a gentle, but slightly longer breath, inhale, maybe a count of four, and a slightly longer exhale, maybe a count of five, whatever feels comfortable, but the exhale being just a little bit longer than the inhale. And when you're ready, bringing your meditation practice to a close, opening your eyes. Yeah. So, welcome. I'm going to give a little bit of a talk on this idea of medicine poetry, poetic medicine, this practice of poetic medicine, and then we'll do some poems, and we'll do communal poetic medicine. So maybe some definitions, if not definitions, some useful framing, poetic medicine as the healing art of poem making and poem reading and listening. Yeah? And to do it in community, as a communal experience. John Fox describes this engagement with poetic medicine. He says it's poetry as natural medicine. And then a twist of a phrase, a homeopathic tincture derived from the stuff of life, from direct experience, right? So poetic medicine is a homeopathic tincture. And since poetry speaks the language of dreams, of symbols, of metaphors, of archetypes, it helps us hear meaning and make meaning of our experience of writing, reading, listening to poetry. When we listen to poetry, whether we're listening as we read it to ourselves or as a communal activity, what we're really engaged with is ear witnessing, an engagement with the oral and the aural. And this engagement, this ear witnessing that links mind, body, heart, invites healing. Yeah? Poetry as healer. The other piece that's useful in this intersection of poetry, healing, mindfulness, and engagement with the intimate is that poetic medicine, this tincture, opens up an interior place where our intuitive voice awakens and thrives. We might refer to this as involution, a shift in interiority, right? It's not a head knowledge. It comes deep from within. And some of you have practiced with Marv Belzer, one of my important teachers and many of yours. He talks about the way-seeking mind or the way-finding mind. It's an act of self-discovery in the process of the oral and the aural. And it's a form of connection, identification, processing. It is an invitation to the involution of the intuitive voice. Those of you who have read Robin Wall Kimmerer's book, Braiding Sweetgrass, she recently published a new book titled Serviceberry. And she uses a beautiful phrase. I just love this phrase because it speaks to this involution, this shift in interiority, the intuitive voice. She refers to this space as the tingle of synchronicity. Yeah? The tingle of synchronicity. It's a voice from someplace other than the mind, right? The sense of the mind, the intuition, deep involution, deep connection. So this tingle of synchronicity this intuitive voice, this poetic medicine, we can also think about in terms of the grammar of the soul. Yeah, the grammar of the soul. This facility that we develop to hear something deeper about this experience of living, being, yeah? This experience of the intimate. Stefan Levine, an important teacher in the field of mindfulness and meditation, refers to poetry as birth chant. Yeah? Yeah, birth chant. Poetry as birth chant, a surfacing, an arrival. Yeah. So I'm going to stop there. There is more I can share, and maybe if we have an opportunity to continue this conversation, I'll add more. But for now, what I'd like to do is invite you to read poetry in community. Yeah? Communal poetry medicine reading, if you wish. What I'll do is I'll share a screen, poem. I'll invite volunteers to read a poem. I hope that we can read maybe three. That might be too ambitious, but we'll try. And if you're so inclined, no coercion, if you're so inclined to engage in the reading of the poetry, please share your name, unmute, share your name, read the poem title as well as the author's name. And I invite you to read slowly. We're not in any hurry. We're in conversation with the intimate. So there's no need to rush. We read it as a tincture of homeopathic medicine, right? And letting it absorb in us as others are absorbed by the ear witnessing that takes place. If a particular line or phrase hits home or invites a proximate healing, then give yourself permission to read it again. Yeah? Read that line, read that phrase again. So if you come across a line that doesn't quite make sense and you feel like you want to go back and read it, do that. And of course, if you wish to pause, take a breath, start again, that's beautiful. So make this poem your own, in your own voice. And those of us who are listening, we are practicing communal listening. We might call this communal relational mindfulness. Right? Many of you have been practicing with UCLA mindfulness for many years, and so are familiar with relational mindfulness. Well, that's what is really taking place here. Yeah? Communal relational mindfulness, listening with kind attention and presence. Yeah? So far, so good. As sometimes I sit next to a tree and wait for it to share with me moments of the teacherly. And one time the tree said, come sit, let's sip some tea together. So I'm going to sip some tea with you right now. So I'm going to share the first poem. Yeah, it's a It's a beauty. Ah, yes, there you are. Okay. So I'm going to ask if someone would like to volunteer to read this poem. And it's called I Happen to Be Standing by Mary Oliver. And Nancy, yes, please read the poem. And remember to read it slowly, reverently, as a tincture of medicine. Yeah.
Dr. Ali, is it possible to make it a little bit bigger, even though I can see it, though?
Of course. Say when good enough.
Oh, good enough.
Good enough? All right. And I'll scroll up and down for you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you so very much.
Of course.
I Happened to Be Standing by Mary Oliver from Devotions, Penguin Press, 2017. I don't know where prayers go. I don't know where prayers go or what they do. Do cats pray while they sleep, half asleep in the sun? Does the opossum pray as it crosses the street? The sunflowers, the old black oak growing older every year? I know I can walk through the world. I know I can walk through the world, along the shore or under the trees, with my mind filled with things of little importance in full self-attendance, in full self-attendance, a condition I can't really call being alive, a condition I can't really call being alive. Is a prayer a gift or a petition? Is a prayer a gift or a petition? Or does it matter? The sunflowers blaze? Maybe that's their way. Maybe the cats are sound asleep. Maybe not. While I was thinking this, I happened to be standing just outside my door with my notebook open, which is the way I begin every morning. Then a wren in the privet began to sing. Privet began to sing. He was positively drenched in enthusiasm. I don't know why, and yet, why not? I wouldn't persuade you from whatever. I wouldn't persuade you from whatever you believe or whatever you don't. That's your business. But I thought of the wren singing. What could this be if it isn't a prayer? What could this be if it isn't a prayer? So I just listened, my pen in the air.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you, Dr. Ali.
Beautiful. Let's do a second reading and see if we can follow it up, follow Nancy's up with another reading. See if someone would raise their hand or unmute and volunteer. And of course, we can let go of perfection and all those other Susan, yes, please. Go ahead and unmute.
Am I reading the same poem?
I'm sorry?
Am I reading the same poem?
Yes, yes. Okay. We're going to give the poems two readings.
Oh, okay. Sorry, would you mind
making
just,
it larger?
Yeah, making it larger.
All right.
Like, yeah.
Good?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Perfect.
I happened to be standing by Mary Oliver on Devotions, Penguin Press, 2017. I don't know where prayers go. I don't know where prayers go. Or what they do. Do cats pray while they sleep? Half asleep in the sun. Does the opossum pray as it crosses the street? The sunflower? The oak, black oak, the old black oak growing older every year. The old black oak growing older every year. I know I can walk through the world. I know I can walk through the world. Along the shore or under the tree, with my mind filled with things of little importance. In full attendance, in full self-attendance. A condition I can't really call being alive. Thank you. Is a prayer a gift or a petition? Or does it matter? The sunflowers blaze, maybe that's their way. Maybe the cats are sound asleep, maybe not. While I was thinking this, I happened to be standing just outside my door. With my notebook open, which is the way I begin every morning. Then a wren in the privet began to sing. He was positively drenched in enthusiasm. I don't know why. And yet, why not? I wouldn't persuade you from whatever you believe or whatever you don't. That's your business. But I thought of the wren's singing, what could this be if it isn't a prayer? So I just listened, my pen in the air.
Wow, thank you, Susan. Beautiful. Yeah, so
I was just, yeah. So suddenly, felt things. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I just felt deeply.
It's hard for me to hear you. Could you say that
Okay.
again?
Maybe I'll take hand. Let me just. I don't know. Okay.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Is that
Yes,
better?
very well. Yeah, thank
Okay.
you. Please share.
Yeah. No, just no, I just yeah, I just first, this is my first time reading a poem out loud
Yes.
in front of others,
Yes.
and yeah, it was very moving.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank
Yeah,
you.
it was just
And
very moving.
you did beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you.
And Nancy, would you like to make a comment if you feel like you have a comment you want to offer, no pressure, about the poem?
Dr. Ali, it was astounding to think about the prayers that are all around that I might not be aware of. And that's what's so striking to me. What could this be if it isn't a prayer? That I think I will listen and be more aware and look for prayers
Yeah.
where I don't know, have been there all along. So I think I will listen maybe with my pen in the air or with my heart open for the listening for the prayers.
With
It's
that pen in
gorgeous.
the air. Yeah.
It's a gorgeous poem. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it is. And a couple of things I'd like to kind of comment on is once again, attention as the grammar of intimacy and devotion, right? The purposeful decision to redirect attention towards the immediacy of the present moment. And she has a line in there that says, "Is this really living?" Right? When we're so in the general, in the fears and anxieties, and our minds are in the past and the future, and we have no tools to, unless we continue with this practice of mindfulness, to redirect, reorient the mind as she did. All of a sudden, the bird and the privet reoriented to the present moment. Yeah. And then the beautiful phrase, pen in the air, right? Pen in the air, attention, attention as an encounter with the teacherly. My pen in the air, yeah, listening to what Robin Wall Kimmerer suggests as the tingle of synchronicity, yeah, or metaphysically, pen in hand, antenna-like. Listening for the grammar of the cosmos, for the grammar of the soul, that intimate intuition that speaks from within, yeah? Pen in the air to receive the teacherly moment experience, right? Either an insight, intuition to a poem, to a project we're working on, right? And such a beautiful simplicity. Yeah, I don't have to work hard, just my pen in the air and my attention. Yeah. Thank you for that beautiful reading. Going to let me see if there's anyone else that wants to, who did not read but might want to make a comment about what this poem, what it meant, or how you interacted with it. I'll give a little bit of time to see if anyone wants to unmute and share. And while you're thinking, Susan, thank you for the courage to read a poem for the first time out loud in community. It's beautiful.
Oh, just from what you shared, yes, it was a big release. of what's been was been happening the last couple of days, and was like, yeah, and just to, yeah, the last line, understanding that last line more deeply. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, let's do. Oh, we have chats. I have not been following the chats. Let's see. Did I miss the meditation part? I just got the thought, try joining in. Okay, yeah, there was a brief meditation at the beginning, but let's decide that right now you are in meditation, right? You're focusing attention. And we're at the intersections of poetry, mindfulness, and poetic medicine. So you're doing wonderful. Yes. All right. Wonderful. Wonderful. So we're going to do a second poem. And again, this is at the intersections of intimacy, devotion, attention, and healing that comes about as we engage with poetry. And this next poem is titled Dates. And this is dates as the fruit date. I'm going to stop sharing and see if I can share the next poem titled Dates. And of course, invite another person who has not read a poem to please give it a try. We're in this together. Dates. Let's see. Can you see the dates? I'll probably have to make it louder, larger. And it's titled Dates. It's by Rob Cook. Who would like to read this? And again, it's not, it's the fruit. Someone who hasn't had
I'll
it.
go ahead.
All right, what is your name and welcome.
Ellen, Ellen.
Ellen, thank you, Ellen.
Okay.
Can you see
Now,
me well?
I have my window open, so I hope it's not too much background noise.
No, you're fine.
Okay. I don't see the so dates, and it's by
Dates.
Rob Cook.
Yes,
Okay.
yes.
Dates. Yesterday, you brought me some pitted dates. Stuffed with point Reyes blue cheese, my favorite. And on top of each, an almond. But deep in work and worry, all I saw was interruption and glared with annoyance. The affection between us thrown askew. In the space of a look, a seemingly minor moment, but life is lived in little moments, built on little choices, and we miss out on it. One little plate of pitted dates at a time.
Yeah, thank you, Ellen. It's beautiful. Yeah. Let me we'll read it a second time, but let me offer some comments and insights that tie into this intersection of healing and connection and the intimate, right, as teacherly. This poem, Dates, as sometimes we get so busy that we miss small acts of kindnesses that are always present. Family, loved ones, strangers. And in this particular poem, poetry writing is healer and salve. So this individual, this writer, this had an experience of missing the moment, and then using poetry, this pen in the air, to find the language of healing for a missed opportunity. Yeah? To be reminded that we can always begin again, that we don't have to be perfect, that we can, that we, even in the midst of love, sometimes we falter. But mindfulness allows us to notice, and we can begin again. We can, which is what we do in mindfulness practice, right? We drift, but we begin again, and again, and again. And we do that in relationships as well, right? Rupture and repair, rupture and repair. And this poem is about repair. It's about noticing and taking loving kindness action, even when at the point of origin it was missed, right? So the power of small kindness is to be teacherly, to notice pitted dates, my favorite, your love, your kindness, and I missed it. I was too engrossed. Yeah? And yet this kindness was still teacherly if we pay attention. It's also an act of forgiveness. Yeah? Particularly an act of forgiveness towards self. Yeah? So the process of writing poetry, that pen in the air to receive the grammar of goodness, the grammar of repair of relationships is very evident and so beautiful and instructive. Yeah, we can always begin again. The part of us that is perfectionistic sometimes misses the beauty of beginning again, and the necessity of it. The notion that the very act of being in a relationship, any relationship, is a lifetime journey of many forgivenesses. Not many, many, and many, right? To be in relationship is an act of forgiveness again and again and again. And this poem does such a beautiful job of doing that for me. And so I'm going to share my screen and, oops, not this one. Where are you, my dear? Yes, there you are. And see if we can get another reading of this beautiful poem. Yeah, second reading. Who'd like to volunteer?
I'll read it.
Oh, thank you. Your name too, please.
Elaine.
Elaine, thank you, Elaine.
Dates. Yesterday, you brought me some pitted dates, stuffed with Point Reyes blue cheese, my favorite. and on top of each an almond. But deep in work and worry, all I saw was interruption and glared with annoyance. The affection between us thrown askew in the space of a look, a seemingly minor moment, but life is lived in little moments, built on little choices, and we miss out on it, one little plate of pitted dates at a time.
Beautifully read, Elaine. Thank you. Yeah. Life is lived in little moments, right? It's the intimate that's teacherly. We get so caught up in the general. And it's all in the intimate moment, right? Built on little choices. And isn't that what we do when we practice our daily sitting meditation? Little choices, oh, the drift. Little choice to come back to the present moment, yeah? The more we can do that, the more chances we have of not missing out on one little plate of pitted dates at a time, right? Which is a metaphor, right? Poetry is metaphor, archetypes, symbols, yeah? Thank you, beautifully read. Let me see what the next poem is. Oh,
Dr. Yeah. Ali.
Yes.
Before you go on, this is Ellen. I was the first reading of dates.
Yes.
Very interesting, because my father in the 1940s or brought my mother a box of dates when they were dating. She thought it was a box of chocolates, and she said she practically threw them at him. And I just thought, isn't that so funny? And she, all through her marriage, she just said, what a fool I was, you know, that she missed that to be grateful, you know? So I thought that was so funny that it was a same scenario.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought I'd mention that.
Thank you. Thank you, Helen. Yeah. Yeah. Elaine, would you like to share anything about the poem that moved you or you connected with?
Well, I can connect with, you know, having been in relationships and being stressed about work or whatever, and not appreciating the gesture and in the moment. And
and so part of our practice in daily life is to make an effort, not all day long, but to make an effort to notice small acts of kindness. Sometimes we can cultivate that not by noticing acts of kindness with those most closest to us, but acts of kindness of strangers, in the little acts of kindnesses. That deepens, widens our capacity for noticing kindness closer to home. Yeah. So we don't have to get it right. We don't have to get it perfect. We don't have to have resolve, well, from now on, I'm going to be 100% appreciative of my partner. And, you know, if it only were that simple, right? Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Elaine and Ellen. So this next, oh, let me see, there's a chat. Oh, my goodness. I think it's about how, this is from James. I think it's about how we cling to negativity bias instead of looking for those small things around us that bring some sense of peace and ease. Yeah, it's part of it. Yeah, definitely negativity bias, but also to not underestimate how the urgency of our lives can occlude the noticing of goodness in the moment, right? So the urgency of being involved in a task that has a deadline, for example, and there's nothing malicious about that, but we're just so involved, and then someone offers kindness and you're messing with my but it's not so much a negativity bias in that sense. It's just life can hijack us. The question becomes, how quickly can we return, right, to that space of grace? Yeah. And with the mindfulness practice, we might have more opportunities to repair, yeah, our own disappointment for how we might have acted, and the disappointment of someone who may have offered kindness, but we were just weren't in the space to accept it. And of course, the negativity bias is a definite part of that, for sure. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Thank you. So this next poem is just a lovely poem. It's called Cold Solace. And before I share it with you, I want to note that it is a very tender poem. And it is, it needs to be heard with deep tenderness. Yeah. And love. So I'll share it with you ask if someone would please, who has not read yet, to read the poem. And of course, I'll make it larger. It's called Cold Solace. Anyone like to raise their hand and guide us through this one?
Could you make it bigger?
Of course.
Thanks.
Would you like? Oh, did I share the wrong one? All right, let me see if I can find it.
It's just really small.
Yeah. So I'm going to make it larger and are you interested in reading it, Elaine?
Unless there's somebody who hasn't read yet.
There does not appear to be a So you go ahead, please. Okay.
Cold Solace by Annabelle Kaufman. When my mother died, one of her honey cakes remained in the freezer. I couldn't bear to see it vanish, so I waited, pardoned, in its ice cave behind the metal trays for 2 more years. On my 41st birthday, I chipped it out, a rectangular resurrection, hefted the dead weight in my palm. Before it thawed, I sawed with a serrated knife the thinnest of slices, Jewish Eucharist. The amber squares with their translucent panes of walnuts tasted, even toasted, of freezer of frost. A resin delicacy delivered up from a deli in the underworld. I yearn to recall life, not death, the still body in her pink nightgown on the bed, how I lay in the shallow cradle of the scattered sheets after they took it away, inhaling her scent one last time. I close my eyes, savor a wafer of sacred cake on my tongue, and try to taste my mother to discern the message she baked in these loaves when she was too ill to eat them. I love you. It will end. Leave something of sweetness and substance in the mouth of the world. Wow.
Thank you. Thank you, Elaine. Yeah. How does that land for you?
It's really intimate and powerful, but kind of universal for, you know, people who have lost someone.
And before my mother passed away, she had harvested mint from the garden and had dried it. And once they were dried, she cut them up into tiny, tiny mint leaves, dried mint leaves, to use. She passed away in 2013, and the mint still sits in my cupboard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her hands, her love. It's a tincture of poetic.
All the senses, from the taste to the, to getting in the bed, the smell, trying to recapture her smell. All of those are really powerful.
Right. Let me read this second reading. Cold Solace by Annabel Kaufman. When my mother died, one of her honey cakes remained in the freezer. I couldn't bear to see it vanish, so it waited, pardoned, in its ice cave behind the metal trays for 2 more years. On my 41st birthday, I chipped it out, a rectangular resurrection, hefted the dead weight in my palm. Before it thawed, I sawed with serrated knife the thinnest of slices, Jewish Eucharist. The amber squares with their translucent panes of walnuts tasted even toasted of freezer, of frost. A raisined delicacy delivered up from a deli in the underworld. I yearn to recall life, not death. The still body in her pink nightgown on the bed. How I lay in the shallow cradle of the scattered sheets after they took it away, inhaling her scent one last time. I close my eyes, savor a wafer of sacred cake on my tongue, and try to taste my mother, to discern the message she baked into these loaves when she was too ill to eat them. I love you. It will end. leave something of sweetness and substance in the mouth of the world. Yeah, so much love, so much attention to details. The details are teacherly, yeah? The details, yeah? The intentional act of love, yeah? I serrated, I sawed with serrated knife the thinnest of slices, yeah? The thinnest of slices. Anyone would like to share about this particular poem and its meaning for you? You can unmute. Marta says the Cold Solace poem was very moving. Yeah, very moving. Yeah. It reminds me of the healing power of poetry, yeah, of intimacy, of forgiveness. Yeah. And I say forgiveness because we don't know the relationship between this author and the mother who are in this poem. Maybe this is a poem of forgiveness. We don't know, but it's so beautiful. And it reminds me of what Mary Oliver's beautiful phrasing, poetry as a life-cherishing force. Poems are not words after all, but fires for the cold, ropes let down to the lost, something as necessary as bread, an Eucharist, and the pocket of the hungry. Yeah? Yeah. So beautiful. Yeah. So it's time to bring some closure to our hour and a half. And to do that, I will guide us through a closing meditation and will include a poem by Danusha Lamaris titled Small Kindnesses. And these small kindnesses have been a theme in the poems selected today. Yeah. So I invite you to sit comfortably wherever you are, closing your eyes if you wish, leaving open if that's more preferable, feeling your feet on the ground, ground as home base, connection to earth, connection to the truth that we belong here. We belong here. Noticing the heels touch, sensations of toes, balls of the feet, sensing texture, whether on carpet or tile, shoes. And I invite you to, if you wish, gently place your hand on your heart or abdomen or shoulders, a gentle, kind touch, kind attention. And offering yourself some loving kindness in whatever way that feels skillful for you. Yeah. whatever it is I'm feeling right now, may I hold myself with grace. May I hold myself with tenderness. May I offer myself radical kindness. May I have warm bows of friendliness towards myself. May I offer myself a small act of kindness, warmth. Small Kindnesses by Danusha Lamaris. I've been thinking about the way when you walk down a crowded aisle, people pull in their legs to let you by. Or how strangers still say, bless you, when someone sneezes, a leftover from the bubonic plague. Don't die, we're saying. And sometimes when you spill lemons from your grocery bag, someone else will help you pick them up. Mostly, we don't want to harm each other. We want to be handed our cup of coffee hot and to say thank you to the person handing it, to smile at them and for them to smile back, for the waitress to call us honey when she sets down the bowl of clam chowder, and for the driver in the red pickup truck to let us pass. We have so little of each other now, so far from tribe and fire, only these brief moments of exchange. What if they are the true dwelling of the holy, these fleeting temples we make together when we say, here, have my seat. Go ahead, you first. I like your hat. Yeah, what if they're the true dwelling of the holy, these fleeting temples we make together when we say, here, have my seat. Go ahead, you first. I like your hat. Yeah. Thank you for your beautiful practice and for your kind attention, for your practice of intimacy and attention as devotion and as love. And for an hour and a half of slowly opening the heart space. Yeah. Yeah. And it's been a real pleasure being with you, and we'll see you down the road.